Welcome to RFF Reality TV Radio. Each week, Rob and Trevor bring you the latest reality TV news, information, and gossip. Download your shows at rffradio.com, and now, here is the weekly show.
Welcome to the longest-running reality TV podcast on the internet. I'm Trevor.
And I'm Rob.
We got a special show for you guys tonight.
We do. This was planned since the last episode. I mean, we didn't know about this when we recorded the last episode.
And we're coming to you on Monday night tonight, as we had to do the show a little early for our special guest. But do you want to let the cat out of the bag, Rob?
It's Wally Branson. Can you believe it? It's Wally Branson.
Fresh off his second place appearance and second place showing. The Amazing Race, Wally Branson is coming on to RFF Radio.
I cannot believe it. This is really scary.
Now we're starting to get interviews now. If you're a reality TV star out there,
we'll pimp you.
We'll pimp you.
We're really excited about this. And like I said, we had no idea this was going to happen when we were recording the last show. So. And I'm not sure I'll get this out on Monday night, but by Tuesday, it'll be out. So, but we're recording on a Monday night. Our Wednesday show, we're not going to have this week. And then we'll come back to you next week, probably middle of the week again. So what's going on with you, Trevor?
Nothing much. I think we should actually kick the show off with a little Apprentice. I was watching Thursday night season finale, and I was pretty hammered. I'm not going to lie to anybody. But I had to rewind the final thing when Randall said, you know what, there's only one and only Apprentice. Basically, kind of jerked over Rebecca pretty harshly.
I can't believe he did that.
She was saying, I couldn't believe that. I was like, wow.
If I would have been Rebecca, I would have just reached across the table and broke his leg.
Yeah, I could. And she was right there. That was one of the bigger jerk moves I've seen in a long time.
I would have been so pissed off.
They said his popularity rating since that episode has just plummeted.
I bet. Like,
Donald Trump, now all of a sudden he's just hired an apprentice that nobody likes.
You know, Donald had thought that he might hire both of them. And I guess there had been rumors the whole time that he might hire both of them. And the producers were kind of tipped off that there might be two people being hired that night. But Randall changed his mind. So, you could tell, you knew that way who was going to get first pick always. And I don't think Rebecca needs to be, is that her name, Rebecca?
It's Rebecca.
She didn't need to be in a situation like that where she was going to have to bow down to Randall all the time. She's had 15 job offers since the Apprentice finale, so I think she's doing okay for herself.
I think a lot of people feel sorry for her. They're like, wow, what a big asshole that guy Randall is.
I just can't believe he did that. But David is going to have his apprentice update after our Wally interview. So
yes, he is. He'll be closing out the show.
So we'll hear more from him, I'm sure. But we're going to talk to Wally here in probably about an hour. We're not going to podcast that long. We'll come back to you like we did with the Kobe interview. So we are just, this is the pre-interview, what do you call this? The pre-game.
The pre-game show.
The pre-game show.
So I don't know, I can talk out of my ass for an hour.
No, we are not podcast. People would be so tired of us. I can't believe we still have as many subscribers as we do since we did two shows last week. I thought people were going to be like, ah.
I could tell them what I just ate for dinner.
Oh, no, thanks. Was it chicken?
No, it was not chicken.
We need to talk a little bit about... Or do you have anything else to talk about real quick?
No, why don't you jump into...
The Frapper map. I just wanted to say I'm blown away by the Frapper map.
Frapper map is gone. And first off, we apologize there. For everybody who's not being shown on the Frapper map, they're only showing 50 at a time for some reason, which I feel, I wish they would show everybody, but you can get it to show everybody. You just have to keep clicking on it until it says show all markers.
Yeah, and that's right below the map there. So, and people really need to go check that out because you don't know. There are so many places that people listen to us I mean, you could have a next-door neighbor listening to the podcast and not even know it. Literally. We've got 122 pins, I think, on that map. It's amazing.
That means we got some diehards out of our, we have, a couple thousand listeners, and now we got a diehard contingent. It's always good to have that diehard section.
And I just, and this is a little side thing, if you got some time, just go take our survey at rffradio.com/survey. Go ahead.
That, make sure you vote for us on Yahoo Podcast. Yeah. We're up to sixth place right now.
Yeah.
We're the sixth-ranked podcast on the internet.
Yeah, that's amazing. Sixth-ranked rated podcast. So, but vote for us on Podcast Alley too, as well.
Podcast, we're up to 200 votes, I think, on Podcast Alley. Oh, no, 200 plays.
Yeah, 200 plays. There's a lot stiffer competition over at Podcast Alley. Well, should we
get in? I watched a couple other reality shows.
Okay.
I watched Gauntlet, Real World Road Rules. That's gotten off to a decent start. I'm not gonna say, because the original Real World Road Rules Gauntlet was probably the best season in terms of challenge history.
Mm-hmm.
And so this is the Gauntlet too, so it's got a lot to live up to.
Right.
And a completely almost new cast of characters. I mean, there's no Miz, no Rachel, no Veronica, no Tanya, Trishelle, Coral. So, but they've got off to a decent start thus far.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm hoping they can keep up that momentum, because the last few seasons have been absolutely terrible. I'm not going to lie, the Good Guys versus Badasses challenge they had was horrendous. It was the worst thing. Every even diehard Real World listeners/readers are like, what's going on here?
Right.
And then I saw that. Then I watched Project Runway.
Because
I know people sent me emails asking me, why don't you watch Project Runway? I caught an episode of Project Runway. I was watching with my girlfriend, and she's a little worried because I was having too good a time watching it. I was like, I'll watch this every week. She's like, I don't know if I want to watch it anymore.
You know, I need to watch less Discovery Channel and more like Bravo for the reality TV.
It's not a bad show, Project Runway. Lots of models walking around. Heidi Klum. The judges are pretty interesting. I may even write an article on it later this week.
American Idol coming up next month. That's going to be exciting.
It is going to be exciting.
So, well, I think we should get into our Wally interview.
Let's get cranking with Wally.
The next time you hear our voices, we will be on the phone with Wally Branson from the Amazing Race Family Edition. We're going to have a lot of fun, so let us know. Email us at show@rffradio.com. We want your emails about our Wally interview. We are blown away that he's sitting down with us. So we will see you in a few minutes. Well, we are sitting down with Wally Branson, and I have to first say that I am scared to death. It is amazing to have you on, Wally. Thank you so much.
I know I'm intimidating, but try to calm yourself a little bit. So.
Well, tell us, have you watched the show before? Were you a fan of The Amazing Race?
I wasn't a huge fan. My oldest daughter, Beth, has been a real big fan almost right from the start. So she would get me into it now and then. I don't, watch a lot of network television, consistently, but I did watch it from time to time and enjoyed it, and obviously was watching more closely like last spring.
Sure.
When we knew that we were in the running for it. So,
now, how long did the interview process take? Because a lot of people that listen to this podcast have seen the show and are huge fans. So, I mean, we want to know more behind the scenes of what happened. I mean, we do want to know what happened during the show, but we want to know what happened behind the scenes. How long was the interview process for you guys?
Well, I think, the applications were due like in January or February, and I think, I'm going from memory now, I think they called us back like early March and said that, they wanted some more stuff. So they sent us like more forms to fill out and, more information, and talked to us a little bit on the phone.
Mm-hmm.
And then I would say, early April, we got called back for an interview in Chicago. So I think they were probably going to you know, several cities, you know, maybe six or seven cities, I really don't know. Mm-hmm. And, you know, would have a slate of people, you know, in each city to talk to. As a matter of fact, it was just funny coincidence. The Linzes were in Chicago right before, you know, their interview in Chicago was right before ours. We saw them come out when we went in.
Wow.
So that was then. And then got called back, probably early, mid-May to say that we were in the finals and had to, you know, fill out a whole other group of forms, you know, detailed history of your life, everywhere you've ever lived, worked,
wow,
the whole ball of wax. And we went for final interviews with about, 20 to 25 other families, like over Memorial Day, in Las Vegas. And,
that's a good place for an interview.
Well, you're sequestered. You don't get to talk to any of the other teams. You see all the other teams, but you're not allowed to, you know, have any interaction with them. So most of your time is just spent in your little motel room.
How exciting.
And yeah, you know, four of us jammed into one room. And, you know, they call you for interviews or, you know, did a lot of testing, a lot of stuff, and went through a whole set of interviews. And then the last night there, we found out that we were selected. So that was, like I say, end of May, early June, and we left July 2nd. So.
Wow.
And then they came out to our house in mid-June to do a couple days of taping of, you know, some like the opening shot and that kind of stuff.
Now, you have five kids. How did you decide which ones to take on the race with you, or was it your decision?
It wasn't really my decision. You know, my two older daughters had talked about entering, you know, trying to get on as a team, and then the family thing came up, and, you know, I think the three sisters, you know, wanted to do it together, and I just sort of fit in. I'm just, you know, always been like the navigator, travel person of the family. Plus, I think they thought it was just a good sell to CBS, you know, a dad and his three daughters type thing. So
that's,
that was. I mean, when they asked me, my response was, you know, I'll do the tape, but there's no way we're going to get selected. So why do I even care? You know, I mean, there's just. What's the chance? There was like 10 or 20,000 people who sent in, you know, tapes.
Right.
So our chance getting selected is almost non-existent. So, but it didn't work out that way.
Now, were you a little reluctant when you finally got chosen? Were you like, what did I get myself into? Why am I doing this? Or were you pretty excited?
I was excited. I mean, it is hard in that, you know, you have to carve a month out of your life. You know, I do have a job, and, you know, and all those types of things. And
dang job, they get in the way, don't they?
Right, yeah, little details, you know. So, and you can't tell anyone what you're doing. So everything has to be kept a secret. And, you know, that makes it difficult. And I knew it would be difficult on, you know, my family, my wife, just to leave her here and have her field all the questions as to where everybody's at and, you know, kind of have to lie through all this different stuff. So that part of it I wasn't, you know, that thrilled about. But, you know, I was real excited about the actual race part of it. Mm-hmm. So,
how hard was it to hide that you guys finished second place? Because after a while, when you got down to, like, the final four, final three, your neighbors, friends had to be wondering, you know, did you win?
Yeah, everyone tries to pry something out of you, and you get, for the most part, you get so used to it, it's pretty difficult, you know. And we just with everyone in our family and everyone else, we just kind of took the attitude of, you know, we can't say anything, and it's more fun for you if you don't know what's going to happen. And that was kind of hard, you know, especially like with my wife and that type of thing. But I think she enjoyed it more, you know, having it all unfold each week. But, it makes it kind of difficult.
When you started the race and seen all the other teams, what did you think of your chances then? When you seen all these other basically almost 40 people What did you think? Did you think, oh my God, we are going to be the first ones out? Or did you really think, oh, well, we've got a pretty good chance of this?
Yeah, you know, I think we kind of went back and forth, you know, just trying to think of the people that we saw kind of come through. I think we generally had the feeling like we have as good a shot as anybody.
Mm-hmm.
You know, not that there were, you know, that many that you looked at them and said, oh, gee, you know, just by looking at them, you're going to have a problem type of thing. And, you know, and some had smaller kids, and so you had to kind of figure that was, you know, was an advantage to you. But you just didn't know what was going to take place, how they were going to structure it, was it going to be structured differently with children, and, you know, all those kind of things were going through your mind, too. So, I mean, I think originally we didn't have high expectations because
mm-hmm.
We don't have any language skills, and, you know,
right.
we're not a overwhelming physical presence, so... you know, generally, I don't think we went in thinking, oh, we're really going to blow through this thing. But my feeling was sort of, if we can just get by a leg or two and you know, kind of get our bearings,
mm-hmm.
we should do okay. And that's kind of how it ended up going. You know, we kind of struggled a little bit the first couple legs, and then, you know, got going after that.
Tell us about that Civil War reenactment, because you were focused in on that as having the hardest time with that challenge.
Yeah, that, you know, the one thing I went into this, I said, I'm not going to blame the editors, you know, because you hear all these people say, oh, it was just edited that way.
Uh-huh.
But I think on that one, they really did edit me a much tougher time than what I really had, you know. And even one of my daughters, when we saw the previews after the first week, she said, you know, Dad, you know, you did okay with that. It's the other stuff that you had the problem with, you know. So, but they definitely, I mean, they edited in some words there, you know, like, there's a point, like, with the stretcher where I say, I can't, guys, or something like
mm-hmm.
that. And that, I did say that, but like 10 minutes later, and they used it again later when I did say it, when
uh-huh.
the ILs were, like, sprinting to the finish and we were right behind them. And at that point, I did say, I can't, you know, basically meaning, you know, I can't sprint to try to catch them.
Uh-huh.
But they took that exact same clip and dubbed it, you know, onto the battlefield, you know. So, and we were all struggling, but, it, you know, like I say, it was a long day. You know, unfortunately, we did the, at the tidal basin, that thing about running around with the briefcase.
Oh,
you know, we didn't think that was going to be a physical type thing. We thought maybe it would be, you know, you had to figure out clues or whatever.
Yeah.
It said, you know, I forget, covert operation.
Uh-huh.
So I ended up running around the tidal basin on top of everything else, which I didn't need. So I was pretty exhausted. But, you know, for the most part, we did real well on the battlefield. You know, we got there with the ILOs, and we finished with them, you know. So
right.
We couldn't have struggled that much. I mean, they kind of showed them kind of zipping through it and us struggling, but, you know, when you think about it, we got there and finished at the same time, so we kind of did it at the same pace. So. And it was a lot like that.
I have a question about the stadium challenge. Now, were you guys hampered by did you guys all have to stay within a view of your cameraman? I was wondering why nobody ever... Why everybody
right.
didn't split up into, like, one person and take a section of the stadium. Was that
yeah,
just not allowed?
I saw you mention that. Yeah, there is the 20-foot rule.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, that clip of me kind of, you know, getting it out with my daughters, that was really around that idea. They wanted me to stay closer to them because they, you know, they didn't want me being too far away for the 20-foot rule. At that point, we had been there so long, I could care less if somebody had yelled at me about being too far away. But,
was that the point that you said, and I quote, I'm going to kick somebody's ass?
Well, and that was dubbed in there, too. I mean, I did say that, you know, but what had happened was we had looked around, and we got to a thing that, I don't know, there was, like, pieces of, like, a clue. You know, there was some, like, Amazing Race stuff laying there by a seat and stuff. And we thought, is this it? And our camera, you know, our crew guys were like, well, look, you know, they weren't sure. They called down and they came back, no, I guess that's not it, this and that. And we probably searched the whole place twice. So at that point, I think we were just walking along, and I was kind of like near the crew guys, and I just basically said, you know what, if I find out that this thing isn't up here, yeah, I'm going to kick somebody. So they kind of dubbed it around like I was, you know, it wasn't directed at my daughters at all.
They like to make it sound like it was, though.
Oh, definitely. Yeah, they do a lot of dubbing of stuff. I mean, just even today, I just thought of some things where you hear yourself saying the same thing over and over again over the weeks, and you know that they picked it up. You know, they told us that every minute of footage that they have of everything is cataloged. They have people who transcribe every word that you said over the entire time.
Oh my God.
In the car, whatever. So, you know, if they want you to, you know, they want a clip of you saying, you know, idiot stick, they just go to the computer and find it and bring it, you know, so.
Now, you guys had some very good first place finishes, and you won some great prizes, but we'll get into that in a little bit. How about that non-elimination leg where you guys were last? What did you think that it was a non-elimination leg? Did you have an inkling, or did you think it's over? We're last. It's over. We quit.
No, we thought there was a good chance. You know, I mean, you spent a lot of your dead time on the race, kind of calculating what do you think is left. You know, when are the non-eliminate? You know, and then it got to the point where, you know, we had enough episodes in, and you start to calculate, well, they're going to have to get so many left that you knew that the non-eliminations would almost have to come every other week. So, yeah, we were kind of expecting it, and, you know, that was a tough day. You know, it was just that go-kart thing was a lot harder than what I thought it would be, especially when they gave you the helmet and the jacket to wear in the 110-degree heat. But we, you know, we stopped at that hotel and actually got directions, but they weren't real clear, and we ended up, you know, turning before we needed to turn, and that's all, you know, that's all we needed to come behind the Apollo. So, and then that's, you know, that's what it is. Half the time you just make one mistake and you're through. So
now about the non-elimination leg, tell us more. What was it like to start with nothing, basically? What did they take? What did they give you? Just things that we didn't get to see on TV.
Yeah, they took, you know, they took everything, you know, everything other than what we had, you know, on our back. And, you know, they, whatever medicine, you know, they said like prescription, whatever, but they, any type of medicine thing, you know, they let us keep and, and stuff, you know, that type of thing. But everything else left. And luckily we were kind of in a good position in that, you know, we're in the United States. And although we started, you know, in the middle of the night, it was like midnight or 1 o'clock in the morning. We knew we were right by the casino, so that was our plan right from the start. You know, we knew the casino would be open, and we'd go there and, you know, see who we could, you know, hit up on, and we did real well there in a hurry, you know. So, I mean, you know what the girls are going to do real well, so.
Plus, you have the whole karma thing going on in casinos. People want to give out money.
Well, it's hard because you got them coming out of the casino, and half of them were like, yeah, you should have got me when I was coming in. You know? But, you know, some people kind of recognized that we were on the race, and that helps a little bit. And but, you know, people were generous, and we were doing real well until the casino security found out we were out there, and they didn't go for that at all.
So
They had like 10, 15 people come out and get all hyper about it. But, we basically got we got the same money as everybody got for that leg of the race. So, you know, we were down the amount that most people were carrying over, but, you know, we were in pretty good shape.
Did you have a lot of money left over from leg to leg, or was it pretty much wiped out when you got to the leg?
Normally it's left over, you know. Part of the, you know, it just depends. Early on, you're real tight with how you spend it. And then as it keeps going and going, the girls will be like, you know, oh, let's buy some more food, you know, or buy little snacks, or, you know, and then because you were kind of used to being able to survive on what they gave you. So we probably got a little more lax as time went on. But, Yeah, you were always able pretty much to control, you know, your spending so that you could always have a little extra each time if you needed to.
What did they pay for and what didn't they pay for?
You had a credit card to use for gas and for airline tickets.
Mm-hmm.
You'd have food at the pit stops and, you know, normally in the morning if you're starting, you know, and even if it wasn't the start of a leg, it was like, you know, overnight with some sort of like scheduled departure the next day. Normally they'd have some kind of, you know, mm-hmm. bagels or something there.
Sure. Continental breakfast.
Right, exactly. So that's it. You know, I mean, everything else, other than a little bit of food that was there, everything else, you were on your own.
I got a quick question. Twice on the show, somebody's batteries got drained by the cameraman. Was there anything behind the scenes that went on because of that?
No, it was, you know, they had these Yukons, were all outfitted with several mounted cameras in them, and all the camera equipment, you know, hooked in, and right from the start, we, you know, a lot of us noticed, like, the alternator light would come on now and then, and, you know, so we were a little concerned about it, and I just think that, you know, all having all that stuff hooked into the electrical system and then tacking on to that, hauling the trailer, it just, you know, it just overloaded some of the systems, mm-hmm. I think. So it wasn't, they made it sound like somebody did something, you know, that day, but it was just the way it was set up, and, you know, like I say, there's probably just too many things being hooked into the car's electrical system.
We blamed a stupid cameraman twice on this show, so.
Right, yeah, I mean, yeah, I heard some people saying, oh, this, like, you know, like some camera guy came over and plugged his camera into the battery or something. It wasn't like that, but they had to, you know, they couldn't make it sound like it was a problem with the car because they're a sponsor of the show, and,
sure.
You know, so, and it wasn't really the fault of the car, I think. It's just, you know, too much stuff trying to do, you know, they outfitted these things so well, I think they just overdid it.
Now, when the race started, were you expecting to fly out of the country immediately and head over to Europe, or were you expecting, did you know that you were going to stay in the United States and
Yeah, every leg we were looking to go somewhere, you uh-huh. know, every leg it was like, where's the airport, you know,
mm-hmm.
we're always looking over our shoulders, you know, are we leaving now, so it was always directed at, you know, why are we still here?
Yeah.
And, so, yeah, no, there was no thinking that it was going to be as much United States as it was.
Were you disappointed? Were the girls disappointed?
I think everybody was disappointed, you know, especially at the beginning. I think once you get into it, you're just racing,
yeah.
You know, so you kind of lose that feeling of, oh, you know, we wish we'd have gone somewhere else.
Mm-hmm.
And the other piece of it is, you know, although it's great to see things, when you're racing, you get so little real interaction with where you're at. You know,
yeah.
It's just like you're just racing through it. It's not like you're, you know, for the most part, you know, sitting around and talking with locals and getting to do something. You know, you're
don't blink because you're going to miss it.
Exactly. You know, Grand Canyon, yeah, 2 seconds, looks nice, let's get out of here.
Yeah.
You know,
yes.
I mean, that's kind of how it is. And you're so focused on racing that, yeah, you do take in a little bit, but that's not where your mind's at. So,
but was there any social interaction between the teams during, like, downtimes?
Oh, yeah. I mean, at every pit stop, I mean, you know, there'd be food and everybody would sit around and tell their stories about what they did that day and, you know, if there's anything funny. And, you know, for the most part, I mean, all the good stuff that you saw on the show, I mean, we knew it was coming just because, you know, the stories were told and retold, you know. So, yeah, I mean, that's, you know, basically it, you know, sit around and eat together. It just depended, you know, where it was a situation where, like, you were camping or in the camper and those types of things, you had kind of free rein, you
mm-hmm.
know, to interact. Sometimes you'd be put up at a hotel and you're kind of sequestered in your room for the most part, so those you're just kind of on your by yourself.
When you got to Costa Rica and Panama, you had the, I believe it was a roadblock of find the little red bean.
Uh-huh.
How hard was that?
You have to ask Lauren. I don't know if she did it, but...
How hard was that for you, I guess, to stand? I mean, it didn't take her very long, if I remember right.
Not too bad. I mean, she wasn't one of the real quick ones, but, you know, she didn't take real long either. Just looking at it now, it seems maybe a lot more difficult than what I thought it was. Just kind of, you know, standing on the side, you would just think you just spread them out and all of a sudden the red one would pop out at you, mm-hmm. you know, but it obviously was a lot more difficult than that. But, you know, she did a good job, but, you know, we felt bad for Tammy because,
yeah.
you know, she just kept working at it and sometimes, you know, you just can't do anything about it.
How long was she there? I mean, it seemed like on the show they made it seem like she's there for hours and hours and hours. Was that the
Yeah, I mean, I don't know. I'm sure she was there probably for a good hour,
mm-hmm.
you know, but I really don't know. You know, I mean, I think we all kind of came in together. There was like four or five of us that drove in and, you know, all scrambled to get in there. I think they were in that group. And she was there after the weavers were yielded, spent their time, and got their beans.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, it had to be 45 minutes to an hour at least. So,
tell us about a little bit about the other teams. I guess a lot of people want to know more about the weavers. Were they, did they seclude? And I don't mean to put you on the spot here, Wally.
Yeah,
I really don't.
You know, I don't want to. I mean, so much has been said about them that, you know, I mean, we didn't have a lot of interaction with them.
Was that because they secluded themselves, or was that just an illusion that was on TV?
Early on for us, we just didn't seem to run into them that much.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we ended up like racing with the lenses a lot,
yeah.
kind of going same places, same times, that type of thing. So, you know, we spent a lot of time with them. And, but yeah, I think there were more to themselves, you know. I don't think like the daughters didn't like interact a lot with the other kids
mm-hmm.
and stuff. You know, Raleigh was outgoing. He'd like to, you know, want you to play catch with him or
yeah.
do something, you know. I mean, so they had a little bit different dynamic, you know, so.
Very diplomatic answer there, Wally.
Well, you know, it's been so, you know, it was such a theme of the show that, you know,
yeah,
I feel kind of sorry for them because it's not like they're three-headed monsters or something.
Well, but they were really made out to be that, kind of.
Right. Well, you know, but when you step back and think about it, you know, most everything is just stuff that people are saying amongst themselves. You know
yeah.
what I'm saying?
Yeah.
And when you think about things that you normally say amongst your own family about people or whatever, it's not, most of that stuff is not outside the range of normal, you know?
Yeah.
I mean, we were kind of guarded about things that we said, so maybe, you know, maybe they weren't as cognizant of worrying about the camera
mm-hmm.
and the microphone or that type of thing. So,
did you ever get?
I mean,
I'm sorry. Go ahead.
No, it's okay. I just sort of felt that I could kind of see where people were coming from with them, but I also kind of thought that to me it was like an overblown reaction.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? Yeah, somebody'd have to do something really extreme for me to get quite as worked up as some of the people on the race got worked up about
yeah.
them, you know.
Did you ever get used to the microphones and the cameras being around? Was it just something that you just forgot about, or was it always something that was there nagging at you, or was it something more in between?
Yeah, it's part of what you're doing, you know. I mean, but you're all, like I said, you're, at least I was very cognizant of what I would say, you
mm-hmm.
know, I mean, so I guess it was always in the back of my mind, you know, where in normal life I'd be much more quick to, you know, put somebody down or say something about somebody knowing that it's going to be recorded. And it just seemed like at any time I did blow up or do something, it made the show. So, you know, I was probably right, you know, if I'd done one more, that also would have been on the show,
sure.
you know, so... I mean, like every episode came up, I said, oh, that's where I said this. I'm sure that's going to be on. Sure enough, that's where it was, you know. So.
We talked to Kobe here a few weeks ago from Survivor, and he said that he knew when he was on TV. Were there any points for you where you knew where you were on TV? You were like, I know this is going to be on the show.
Right, yeah, and I don't know how Survivor is, you know, if they, I don't know if they follow them all day long, you know, downtime and uptime, or, you know, I mean, the thing with us, I mean, the one thing is we spent a lot of time in the car, and the car cameras are running nonstop.
Sure.
And the trailer cameras are running nonstop.
Wow, so, really?
Yeah, so those things you can't, you know, you could easily... The car you didn't forget about. Sometimes the trailer you did because, you know, you weren't used to that. But they didn't use much of that. So.
Sure.
How far behind did you finish from the Lindses, and how far ahead of the Weavers were you?
Well, like I said, we're, you know, and everything's a blur later. But, you know, it was probably a minute or a minute and a half we ended up behind them. You know, I mean, probably no more than that getting to the board. The Weavers were, I don't know, an hour or two behind us.
Wow.
They got lost. They got lost going to the boat dock.
Hmm. What was that puzzle like? I mean, that puzzle looked like it was a bitch.
It was harder than it looked, you know, to me. I mean, if there's something I should have excelled at, that was it, you know. And I did okay, but not great. But... it was just difficult in that it was very large, and the pieces are right there at the bottom, and, you know, you almost have to, like, step back and look, and then look down at the pieces. You know, it was very hard to get perspective and to, you know, go from the puzzle to the pieces. You know, I mean, you'd have to kind of step back and then look at the pieces for a while, then look up again. It's not like doing a puzzle on a table, that type of thing. And the pieces weren't, they were cut fine, but they weren't cut, like, exact, where, you know, if you saw an exact replica of Missouri, you'd know it immediately, but if the edges are a little rounded or whatever, it doesn't necessarily pop into your mind right away, that type of thing. So it was a little frustrating, I say. I really had hoped I could have caught up there, but I think he did a pretty good job, too, so.
How is Phil? Is he? Did you guys get to interact with him at all? And is he? Was he just like a good regular guy? I hung out with.
Yeah, he's a regular guy. I mean, you know, you get to be around just more or less at the pit stops, you know, and you'd get in, and you know, if he wasn't waiting for somebody, he'd sit around, talk to you, and he's just a regular guy, a good guy, easy to get along with, and. Yeah, all the teams enjoyed being around him. So,
what do you think was your shining moment on the show?
Oh, boy, that'd be hard to find. I never feel like I really shined in anything.
Let's reverse that question. What part of the show were you most embarrassed about?
Most embarrassed about. Yeah, I don't. I'm just trying to think.
The mooning doesn't come to. I mean, I know that wasn't you, but.
Yeah, I didn't. You know, I guess I didn't, and I still don't think that was that big of a deal. You know, I mean, that's something.
I thought,
you know, that they did for laughs. Probably, maybe not the best idea to do it on national television. That you do, like, you know, around town or whatever.
Sure.
But,
that happens in car strips like that. That was hysterical, I thought.
It was a very funny part of the show.
Yeah, it was funny. I mean, it was funny in that it was just the one time Lindsay happened to be driving for us, and she's the one who really wanted to do it. And she was egging Lauren on, and, you know, she's yelling, you know, if you don't do it, I'm pulling the car over so I can do it. And, you know, she'll be able to drive and all this kind of stuff. But it was a long drive from wherever, Talladega to Hattiesburg, Mississippi. And, you know, we were just kind of driving along with them and just looking for something to amuse ourselves. So, I really look back and I didn't really see any big high points or low points. You know, I mean, how you get portrayed sometimes can be a little embarrassing, but I take it all with a grain of salt.
Yeah.
You know, it's just whatever.
Do you think you and your family will ever do like an Amazing Race All-Stars or another reality show?
I doubt, you know, I don't know. Maybe the girls will. I'm not, you know, I've had my 15 minutes, and it's more than enough, really. I mean, although we had a good time, but, you know, it's not like we're sitting around saying, oh, gee, we got to find some other outlet to, you know, stoke these fires of fame again, you know.
What was the hardest challenge for you guys?
Hardest challenge. You know, one of the, you know, probably the thing that worked best for us is we just seemed to make good choices.
Yeah,
you know,
really right?
did. It seemed like every time, for the most part, at least in our mind, we picked the right thing, you mm-hmm. know, and that makes a huge difference. And that, you know, especially early on, like the shrimp boat versus the mud bog. I mean, that put us from second tier to first tier, mm-hmm. and, you know, and that made a huge difference. You know, probably one of the tougher ones, and we got lucky on after a while, was the casino blackjack.
Yes,
thing.
Yeah.
Because I didn't really read the clue that carefully, and didn't realize that, you know, everybody had to beat the dealer, and the dealer got to hold when he beat one of you. And so once we got over there, we realized, you know, it's not going to be as simple as what we thought it was. So. But we just kind of hung in there and got through that. I'm trying to think. We didn't have any real, you know, I'm trying to think of physical things that were really all that hard. I mean, you know, some were difficult. But
the one physical thing that I saw you do specifically was the railroad track.
Right.
That looked really hard.
Yeah, that was hard. It was hot out, and, you know, you picked it because it said precision, whatever, but, mm-hmm. you know, it was probably as physical or more physical than the one that they said was physical, you
right.
know, the coal thing. So it was hard in that they had one set of tracks done, and you had to do the other one.
Mm-hmm.
But at that point, they were getting real tight on not telling you anything as far as giving you any hints as to how you're supposed to do it. You know, the railroad guy wouldn't tell you anything if you asked him a question, or so you had to sort of just try to do it off of the other one. And, you know, there's just questions on how you connect them, you know, because
sure.
you only have one set of tracks. You don't see it connected to anything else. So
right.
You had to kind of, you know, there's different ways you could have done it, and they wouldn't tell you which way was right or wrong. And if it wasn't done right, they wouldn't tell you what was wrong with it, you know.
Oh, wow.
So. It was just like, no, it's not right. And so then you start screwing around with stuff. And, so that was, it was hard. And, you know, the girls really couldn't do anything with the sludgehammer. And, you know, that
yeah.
was fine with me. I was, you know, that's more probably to my strength. And that's strength more than, you know, long distance running. You
sure.
know, I mean, I can pound for a long time, but, you know, running long distances is something else. So that was a good, you know, and we ended up basically getting there just behind the lenses and leaving right behind the lenses.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, we were pretty happy with that, and that, you know, they had three guys going hard, and
yeah.
we had one and didn't really lose too much. So
you guys really kept on their ass most of the time, though, didn't you?
Well, we kind of went, you know, neck and neck. You know, we hadn't spent a lot of time with them until we, you know, met them on the road to Hattiesburg, and we did all that searching in Hattiesburg
mm-hmm.
together, and then rode to, you know, the park in by New Orleans together, and in Costa Rica when we had to drive all over the place on our own. You know, we kind of went together and, you know, worked together on that. And so, yeah, we spent a lot of time kind of together, you know, working on things. And
Now, Peddler from the message board submitted this question, and I really like it. It says, were there any times in the race that you had no idea where you were in relations to the other teams?
Oh, yeah, I'm sure lots of times. I'm just trying to, you know, it's such a long thing, and
mm-hmm.
obviously at the end, you have a better feeling because you're more experienced. But I'm sure early on, you know, we didn't know where some of the other teams were. And you never know exactly, you know, but especially when you're behind, you don't know if you're catching up, like after the Arizona thing and we're trying to catch up to the other teams. You know, you're trying to go by, how, you know, if there's any clues left in the clue box, but a lot of times there's extra ones in there, that type
mm-hmm.
of thing. So, you know, you may or may not pass someone, but it seemed like, for the most part, we had a kind of a good, a decent idea where we stood, but sometimes you'd all of a sudden be surprised. I mean, case in point is the final. You know, we did that shoe thing, and we did it, they made it seem, that was an area where I'm sure they dubbed in some stuff, like me saying, oh, we're getting screwed, and... and I just thought of that today. So I did say that. I heard it somewhere else, I think, in the same show, And I'm sure I didn't say it there because we got in and out of there super quick. And we thought for sure we were in the lead. Mm-hmm. And then we got to that guy on the road to give us directions, and he said, I told your friends. We thought, oh, man.
Yeah.
We couldn't believe that they had gotten ahead of us, So because we did... We went right there, got it done. But I think from what I've read since then, we probably didn't get the best directions to the place. Mm-hmm. And where that isn't as direct to get on the road towards Lewiston or whatever. So,
sure.
But, yeah, you think sometimes, but you don't always know for sure where you're at.
Trevor, did you have a question?
No, I was actually, I'm fresh out right now.
Just so mesmerized by you, Wally. That
yeah. I saw you're a big Illinois fan. You got to be pretty happy about their 10-0 start to the season.
Oh, yeah. It's been a great year, I'm a huge Illinois basketball fan, and then they came in second. And then, when we came in second, I'm also a huge White Sox fan. So I told the guys, from Boston, I said, after we beat the Red Sox, I said, I'm sure we're going to get in the World Series, but I'm also sure we're going to lose in the World Series. That's just the way everything's going, but I was surprised that they actually won out. So it's been a really good year.
I want to talk for a few minutes about the prizes that you won. I guess the prize that was my favorite and was so happy that you guys won was the free gas for life.
Mm-hmm.
Now, we've read in the TV guide that there was a little bit of a stipulation on that. But what do you think of that? You've won two cards,
it's
you won
great,
free life.
Yeah, no, it's it's a great prize. And all I know about it is what, the same things it's just what I've read.
Sure.
So I haven't been told, I haven't seen anything yet, or nobody's contacted us.
So
but,
you don't have
no.
your prizes yet?
No, supposedly our, money, that's supposed to be coming. Mm-hmm. Somebody called me about one of the cars, and, so I'm sure it'll start rolling now a little bit because nothing got distributed till after the show was over.
How are you going to split the cars? I mean, there's four of you.
Yeah, we'll probably have to sell them, I think, just because there's no equitable way to, figure it out with four people and, those types of prizes.
But now for the free gas for life, though, you each got, correct?
We each got it, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
I'm sorry.
But go ahead.
I said, did you say a free gas card or four of you guys? And just
right, that's my understanding is we'll just get a card, it'll have like a $1,200 a year limit on it. That's at least what they said in TV Guide and, go that way. I mean, it was kind of funny when we got there. I mean, of course, we were so shocked to be in first anyway. But and then when they said, for every licensed driver, we're thinking you're all getting a car, and it's free gas for life. And we all had like a 2-second delay as we readjusted our minds. Then we were all excited, but it just kind of caught you off guard, So yeah, we were, that's a great prize. And,
well, in the future, when gas is $100 a gallon, that's really going to come in handy for you guys. I mean, that could be worth more than $1 million.
Well, yeah, if they have an escalator on it, I don't think they will. But I look at the downside. Probably, well before 50 years, there won't be gasoline.
That's
so,
true.
Who knows? But I'm not going to be around anyway, so it won't matter.
Hybrid. You get the big gas guzzling SUV.
Right, exactly. No, I've heard it all from everyone after we got that. But that's really kind of caught people's attention.
I bet. Oh, that I thought that was a great prize. I was shocked.
Oh, yeah.
I thought, wow, that was totally out of left field. It really was. And
definitely. Like I say, we had, we hadn't even been stiffing anywhere close to first, so it just kind of took us totally by surprise and shock that, we were there and then had, got such a great prize.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, we were really excited, so.
Oh, let's see. I just had another question in my head, and I lost it. The hot air balloon ride, how long did that last?
I don't know. It was probably an hour, you know. It was just sort of a sightseeing thing,
mm-hmm.
more or less, you know, so.
At that point, were you just tired of the downtime? Were you just wanting to go, or were you happy? You were going, oh, thank God, you know, a little bit of downtime for us.
Yeah, it was fine, you know, I mean, it's not all downtime because you're just thinking, you know, what are we going to be doing? You know, what's next? You know, is my balloon operator going to be, you know, is he going to screw up or do, you know, who knows? Yeah, I mean, you're thinking, of, you know, you're always thinking about the next thing. So, but, you know, it was a nice ride, but you're just waiting to get down and get going again.
Yeah.
You know, so the only real downtime is when the leg is over and, you know, you can relax and know, you know, you've got a little bit of time
yeah.
for the next one.
Do you keep in contact with anybody from the show?
Yeah, we, you know, most of the teams, you know, we're all on like an email list.
Mm-hmm.
So if somebody has something to say, they'll typically send it to the whole list. And, you
mm-hmm.
know, there'll be conversations going, you know, especially while the show was going on, you know, every day, you know, people, you know, making comments about what people did and, you know, talking about the people who got eliminated and going to New York and that type of thing.
Mm-hmm.
So,
mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's been a real good group and, you know, we get along with everybody.
That's
and,
good.
And it was just kind of a unique experience. I think it's, you know, just started with, you know, the first night in Philadelphia and pitching the tents and everyone
yeah.
kind of helped each other get their tents up and, you know, you've seen all these people for, like I say, you saw them in Las Vegas in the interview thing, and
mm-hmm.
then we were in New York for like 5 days before it started, and you couldn't talk to anybody, so you see them all then, and so you're really looking forward to, you know, you've in your own mind put together who they are or who they
right.
may be, you know, and what their family dynamic is or whatever, so they actually get to talk to them and find out, you know, where they're from, what their deal is, so... It was fun.
When was the last part of the race? When did you finish? What day? Was it into July?
I think it was July 31st, uh-huh. I think. It was a Sunday, I think, that
oh.
we finished.
Wow.
And,
yeah. I mean, I watched the ending again tonight, and probably one of the most emotional endings that I saw.
Mm-hmm.
For you, for your girls, for the Lentzes, obviously. But,
right.
you know, tell us more about that.
At the time or
anything,
it again?
Anything that we didn't get to see.
Yeah, it was, you know, it was hard in that, you know, like I say, you know, being that close and not getting it.
Mm-hmm.
But on the other hand, even at the time, I think, you know, we just really had a sense of being happy with what we did.
Yeah.
We never went into it, you know, saying we want to win $1 million. That was never, you know, at least in my mind, I think the girls too.
Yeah.
You know, that wasn't important to us. You know, we loved the concept of the show and, you know, what it was about and, excuse me, we just sort of looked at it, you know, each week, you know, the first week was like, we just don't want to get eliminated the first week.
Mm-hmm.
And then, you know, if we can just get by one more show, one more. And, so to make it all, you know, where we felt that we raced it all the way to the finish line, you know, we really felt good about that and how we had done. So it was emotional. It, you know, it kind of caught, yeah, I mean, I can get very emotional about my daughters and my sons, you know, my
mm-hmm.
children in general, but, it still kind of caught me by surprise and that, you know, Phil asked me about the girls and, it's the type of thing where you answer that question like 50 times during the race. You know, every
sure.
interview, you know, after every leg and whatever, that's a question that comes up two or three times. So you're used to answering it,
mm-hmm.
you know, in whatever way. You might put a little twist on it differently one time to the next. But so to have, you know, all of a sudden to get very emotional about it kind of caught me by surprise. I was just sort of looking to, you know, pull out one of my stock answers and maybe come up with a little bit better one for the finish line and You know, but it just kind of hit me at that point. You know, it was just a good experience. And, you know, the girls were, you know, just did such a fantastic job. And they have such, you know, great attitudes, positive. So, you know, it just made it good. And, you know, I think that some of those feelings just sort of hit me at the time. And we had a real good relationship with the Lindses. I enjoyed spending time with those guys. They were a nice release for me sometimes, being around the girls all the time, but they have, you know, guys to talk to and stuff. So, you know, we liked them a lot and got along real well with them. So, you know, I was happy for them, and, you know, I was proud of them. I thought for, you know, obviously I'm older, but, you know, for four young people like that to do that nice of a job, and, you know, really, you know, they kept a very positive attitude, and were just a lot of fun. You know, I was very proud of them, so it was good.
Now, about the interviews, did you have to do an interview after each leg of the race, or was that before the leg started, or how did that work?
Normally both, but your bigger one would always be after the leg, mm-hmm. or even if you stop for the night, you know, you'd do a smaller one, but...
Yeah.
So you'd come in and, you know, get to the mat, and then, you know, you'd have a few procedural things to do with whatever the crew were there, you know, they'd check you in, tell mm-hmm. you what your time in was, when you'd be leaving. They'd always count, you know, you have to... how much money you had, go through that type of thing. And then normally there was either food there or, you know, or you'd do the interview either or, you know, interview,
sure.
then food or food then interview. And, yeah, you'd get, you know, those shots that you see when people are talking
mm-hmm.
That they intersperse in there, that's always after the leg. And,
I see.
You know, that could be like an hour.
Did you have to do any single interviews, like by yourself, where you would have a chance to bash your daughters if you so well chose to?
Yeah, a little bit. I mean, they would do groups, and then they'd, you know, say, okay, you know, they want to do every person, or a couple people they'd want to do. So, not a lot. It was mostly
sure.
group,
yeah.
you know. But, yeah, if you saw a person just sitting there talking, that's what it was.
I
you know,
see.
It would be... after the group got done, and they'd, you know, split you up and
mm-hmm.
take you one at a time.
I know there was a Katrina benefit after the show. I think, was it the Schroeder family that suffered during that storm? How are they doing?
Yeah, I think they're doing pretty well. You know, they're rebuilding their house and, you know, moving on with that. But it sounds very tough down there.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's just... the rebuilding is very slow. You know, there's not a lot of people that are still there. You know, a lot of people haven't come back. So I think it's going to be a slow recovery. I mean, I got to talk to him just kind of briefly, you know, in New York, you know, for the finale, you know, they
mm-hmm.
were in for that.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I was able to talk to him about that, but...
One last question, because I know we've taken up way too much of your time already. But was
no,
there
no
any
problem.
Anything that surprised you about the show that you absolutely were not expecting? Like a rule that, you know, like for example, the 20-foot rule. Was that a total blow or something?
Yeah, it's hard to say now because, you know, yeah, they went through all the rules, and there probably were things that, you know, I didn't realize, you know, but then you get used to them, so they become like second nature. One thing is like if you stopped and, you know, like asked somebody directions, then they'd have to stop and get like waivers from the people to be on television.
Yeah.
So you were sort of selective on who you ask for directions and things, you know, because, I mean, not that it would take a lot of time, but it might take a minute, you know, so you wouldn't just randomly keep asking people things if you thought that they're going to keep needing waivers from
mm-hmm.
the people, you
yeah.
know, that type of thing. And you'd kind of, we'd go more for, like, yelling out the car window and, you know, talking to people in other cars where it was impossible to get them.
Yeah.
So,
loophole, you know, loophole.
So, right, exactly. Well, yeah, you know, so it's those types of things. And that's another part of the show, I guess. There's so much of winning or losing that you really don't see because it's really just directed at the roadblocks and detours and, you know, and that's a big part of it.
Sure.
But who can get there quickest, best, and, you know how to get around easily, you know, is just as important,
mm-hmm.
but definitely not something that you see that much on television. I would say the other thing is, and like I say, I watched it a bit, but not a real lot, but it was, to me, a lot more physically demanding than what I thought it was going to be.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, when I watched it, I thought, and I don't know, maybe it's different, you know, season to season and what they had you do, but we did a lot more running than I thought would be there, you know, and to my detriment, obviously, but, you know, there's a lot of times when, you know, they'll show you going to a task and then you're doing the task and, you know, what's cut out is, you know, you might run a mile or a mile and half to get there, you know.
That would suck.
Yeah, definitely. You know, I mean, like in Panama, the bird watching thing.
Oh,
you
yeah.
know, you got there and it's like, well, it's like a mile and a half uphill, you
yeah.
know. Well, that's not really, you know, highlighted because
mm-hmm.
it's not all that entertaining, but. You know, there's a lot of those where it's, you know, or like Talladega, you get the speedway. Well, it's, you know, I don't know how long of a run it is to run around and actually get in there,
mm-hmm.
you know, and then run back. And so there's a lot of that where, like I say, you watch it on television, it seems like you just kind of go in station to station, you know,
right.
in your car and all that physical aspect of it sort of cut out from it. So
was that that bike around the Talladega, was that pretty physically demanding or not really?
Not, you know, it was the type of thing where probably no matter how hard you pedaled, you're only going to go a certain speed.
Mm-hmm.
So we were the first ones there, and, you know, they originally told us that we had to, like, stay on the white line. Well, you know, we got into one of those turns,
mm-hmm.
and we thought we were going to tip over. I mean, that's how banked that thing
Oh,
is.
My goodness.
And then finally they said, oh, no, you can go anywhere you want, you know, down the bottom. So, you know, that cost us some time because, like I say, we were sort of pedaling and all
mm-hmm.
leaning in trying to keep up because, you know, the racetrack is real neat, you know, but
right.
Those banks are extremely... You know, extremely steep. So,
did you have any sympathy? Well, obviously you did. We all did when we seen the Weavers go there. But did you think that it was that challenge was directed towards them to make drama for the show, or not so much?
I don't think so. You know, I mean, I you know even during the thing, people wondered, oh, gee, are we doing these race things because of that? But
mm-hmm.
You know, I think you know they decided on the teams and. You know, June, that stuff was all in cement by then.
Yeah.
I mean, they're not, you know, they didn't decide to go to Talladega at that point.
Right.
So I think it just, you know, so happened that they had that. Now, I don't know about that Bon Durant thing, whether, you know, some of that, I'm not sure how that all got set up.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know if anybody's mentioned it, but we, you know, we think that there was like a leg in Belize that kind of got cut out.
Mm-hmm.
Because of a hurricane down there.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that, you know, we thought the way it was kind of set up that we were going from Costa Rica to Belize, and well, we ended up, like, having an extra day off and then went, you know, to Arizona. So I think they had to do some, you know, some filling in somehow to come up with another leg in the state.
Yeah.
And how they did it exactly, I don't know.
Mm-hmm.
So.
The miracle of television.
Right, yeah. They scrambled and, you know, seemed to work. But it seemed like to me, like when we were in Utah, it seemed like we were kind of going back and forth along the same ground
mm-hmm.
a lot. So I kind of thought maybe that's where they had to do some improvising and got some additional stuff in there
mm-hmm.
somehow.
Well, Trevor, do you have any more questions?
No, I'm fresh out.
Oh, this has been so much fun, Wally. We appreciate you coming on here and taking time out of your day to do this.
Oh, I'm glad to. I've enjoyed reading your guys' site and just, you know, seeing people come up with figuring out where we were going and you know, like I say, sometimes it's just really fun just to see how well it came together.
Right.
And so to me, that was interesting.
Are you surprised at how well people can guess at where you guys were at, have been?
Well, you know, just, you know, how well you piece together the information and, you know, come up with little scraps of seeing something on a preview and, you know, be able to kind of put the itinerary together, you know.
They do a great job over there.
Yeah, I mean, I always got a kick out of seeing how that would, you know, develop. Although I kind of got a bigger laugh out of the, you know, whatever the Phantom 11th team that people were looking for or whatever. So.
Yes, I was going to ask you about that, but I didn't have guts enough to do it on air. There was no 11th team, was there?
Oh, you want to know about the 11th team?
Sure.
No. that Martian team that we had?
Yeah.
Yeah. Those guys were crazy. I was going to say, the whole show started on a grassy knoll, so, you know, but may have been, right. You never know.
Right in the heart of Roswell, New Mexico.
Area 51. And
that's right. We actually had that part of New Mexico that they cut out or went to Los Alamos or wherever.
Oh, my goodness. Well, Wally, thank you so much for doing this.
Oh, I'm glad to.
Well,
no problem.
We are honored. We are literally honored.
Thanks for coming on the show.
You're welcome. I'm glad I could do it.
Well, our interview with Wally is over. Much fun.
That was a great interview. He really, stand-up guy, took the time to talk to us. That was awesome.
Probably one of the most genuine guys I've ever met in my entire life. I didn't meet him, but got to talk to him. Great guy.
Yeah, I mean, he coming on the show a week after the show finishes up, second place team. I mean, that's just cool.
He's a great guy. Well, we've promised you the apprentice update here after the interview, so we're going to let that play as we head out. Do you have anything else to add before we shut this thing down for this week?
No, but this is Trevor signing off.
I'm Rob. Have a great week, and thanks for listening.
Live from the Lincoln Center, it's the last episode of this season's Apprentice. And recorded in Kyoto, Japan, it's David, bringing you the recap of The Apprentice. Let's begin with the voice. The person doing the voice really sucks. I really don't think they needed someone to do those little pieces each time the show went to a commercial break. However, let's move on to the tasks. Rebecca begins looking for a new MC after Joe Piscopo suddenly gets out because of a union problem. She needs someone qualified to get the job done and do it right. Yahoo still doesn't want any outright solicitations, so Rebecca includes a donation envelope in their VIP gift bag, along with a pamphlet about the Elizabeth Glazer organization. The bar looks great. Yahoo signage is huge. But the Glazer Foundation for Pediatric AIDS is definitely overshadowed. Trump was the biggest wild card for Rebecca's task, as he started the comedy portion of the event 30 minutes early. Man, that just sucks. The comedians were good, however, and it seemed everyone had a good time, even George, who was constantly ripped into from what they showed us by the comedians. The Yahoo purple-white color combination was really well done. Now, on to Randall. Randall says it was his oversight that they were banking on good weather. They had no plan B and had to generate a plan B at the last minute. They still had to hold some kind of event. They just couldn't cancel and go home. So instead of a silent auction that had been planned, they have a live auction with celebrities as well as the normal Joes bidding on items to raise money. Randall definitely did a good job about speaking about the charity, when last episode it didn't seem that he was very interested in it. The auction seemed to run really well. Trump, during the boardroom, rips into Yahoo about the whole not pressing for donations. However, George says that what Yahoo said was a suggestion, but that Rebecca was in charge of making whatever decisions. It was her event, therefore, if she had decided, she could have pressed for donations. Of course, we have the teams talking about their leaders, And, naturally, each team member praises their leader. I don't know. That's the way it happens. Trump gives the standard boardroom questions. Why shouldn't I hire insert name here? Why should I hire you? Now we go to the live portion where Yahoo donates $100,000 to the two charities, Autism Now and the Elizabeth Glaser Pediatric AIDS Foundation, to be split amongst them, and they encourage each of us to donate. Well, why couldn't their VIPs donate? Of course, Trump does hire Randall, who had the much stronger track record and experience, but as Trump was about to hire Rebecca and asks Randall's opinion about maybe hiring Rebecca, Randall says that Rebecca shouldn't be hired since it's not the apprenti, it's the apprentice. And just a note for Randall, it's the apprentices, not the apprenti. Good job on that one, Chief. And Trump just goes with it. Who's the boss and who's the employee? Who dictates what Trump does? Trump or the new employee in Randall? There were many boos, although in the back with the old fired employees, all of Felicia and a few others were definitely seen cheering that Rebecca was not hired. I think Olive was very, very bitter. Rebecca looks really disappointed, and she's going to be famous, she's going to get a great job somewhere down the line, but I just can't believe that. I can't believe Randall's ego about, the whole situation. I was rooting for you, Randall. I really supported you. You're a Star Wars nerd just like I am. And you just do that. I really can't believe it. I've lost a lot of respect for Randall because of that. A lot of things on MSNBC have been coming out. They even had a poll talking about if they thought Randall was racist. Or if it was racist to do that. To ask the black guy that has just been hired to hire the white girl. When in season one, when the white guy was hired, he wasn't asked if they should hire Kwame Jackson. I don't know. They both really performed well this season. I think Trump should have done what he wanted to do and not, listen to Randall. But that's all I got. I can't believe it. I'm just shocked for words with Randall now. But that's all for me now. We're at the 5-minute mark. I gotta keep the show short. Thanks to you, Rob and Trevor, for letting me do this. If some more shows come along the way that I really get into, I'll keep sending you audio files. Thank you very much, RFFradio.com. I'll talk to you later. See you on the boards. Bye-bye.